everybody, and welcome to this session. I've decided to do battle with PowerPoint today. Usually I fold to the pressure, but instead you have a green handout in front of you, which summarizes what I'm going to talk about, so you don't need to take notes. It's all there. As Ollie mentioned, I'm the immediate past president of California PNHP. PNHP nationally and the California Physicians Alliance, which is what we called ourselves here in California until recently, started 25 years ago. We're celebrating the, is that the Silver Jubilee? Someone, is that correct?
Silver 25?
Yeah, silver. And so we hope to not make it to the Golden Jubilee except except with single payer present. So I've been involved since for about 20 years, since pretty much the history, the beginning of the timeline that you see on your green sheet. The first real work on single payer in California started in 1992, which was about 15 years after Canada adopted, actually 15 to 18 years after Canada adopted its single-payer Medicare program. We went to a statewide ballot initiative, a singularly important way to make policy, good or bad, in California. In 1994, with Prop 186, we were outspent 10 to 1 and outvoted 3 to 1. So perhaps an inauspicious start, but we continued on. In many ways. In 1999, we fought for legislation to mandate a study of healthcare options called the Healthcare Options Project, and then, in theory, a decision by the state to pick the best option. The HCOP project was completed a couple of years later. Compared nine reform strategies, three of them versions of single payer, and analyzed by Lewin Associates, a private business-oriented consulting company, which found single payer to be the best in terms of controlling costs and assuring coverage. This report was essentially buried as Arnold Schwarzenegger became the governor. Sheila Kuehl brought a legislation forward as SB 921, and for 2 years, she got it passed by both houses of the California legislature, the Senate and Assembly. Now, in California, you need to have a three-quarters vote to pass anything that has to do with taxes or money. And so this was a policy bill, didn't have that part, and one passed by wide margins but was vetoed by the governor twice. We continued on with SB 810, essentially the same bill, which passed the full Senate but only Assembly committees, and last year failed by a vote of 19 in favor, 15 opposed, and 6 abstentions, where the abstentions counted as no votes. Why did it fail, despite great interest in health reform? Because of the ACA. All of our, or some of our Democratic allies said, basically, you know, single payer is great, but the ACA is the game in town, and we need to pursue that. Anything, any vote for single payer will be perceived as going against that. We plan to reintroduce the bill in the Assembly. And importantly, there are two developments which I'll talk about in a little more detail. One is the technical advisory group, which I chair, and the other is a campaign for a healthy California. The latter is far more important of the two. The Campaign for Healthy California is a coalition of statewide organizations advocating for a single payer. We've had coalitions all along, but this is a coalition on steroids. This is a much bigger effort in terms of the level of commitment and our ability to bring organizations together, and also our ability, just being seen in the last couple of months, to connect with the kinds of left-leaning or progressive donors that we can find in California around Hollywood and in other places. There's a lot of money arrayed against single payer, and California, I think, is still seen as a bellwether state, that if single payer wins in California, that will be the beginning of a national force. As Ali said, we do want to eventually get this national, and so we need to fight those resources with resources. and we're actively involved with discussions. We're not there yet. We have a five-year plan. In 2017, the ACA has the implementation of a state waiver. According to the ACA, at that time, if a plan is proposed, including explicitly a single-payer plan, that meets some basic requirements, such as not adding costs to the federal government, to the federal budget, and assuring coverage at least as high as you would see with exchanges, then that state waiver can be approved by the federal government and implemented. We think the technical standards are easy to meet, but it will be still an important political battle for the state to choose to take advantage of the 2017 waiver in the ACA, and that's our timeline over the next 5 years. The chair of this effort is also the executive director of PNHP California, Bill Skeen, and we have a full-time coordinator, Cindy Young, from the CNA. PNHP California has an important role in all of this as having a good collection of both active physicians, physician leaders, and academic researchers. And the California Nurses Association is a tremendously important organization, having been consistently and resolutely in favor of single-payer with lots of resources for the last decade and more. The other piece that's going on in a parallel with this political work is the technical advisory group. We realized, looking at the state bill, which is currently called SB 810, that through a series of reintroductions and tweaks here and there, that it began to deviate from H.R. 676, and we felt the need to look closely at those deviations and try to determine whether they made sense as a way to adapt single-payer to California, or whether they represented the changes that snuck in for whatever reason that could basically undermine the single-payer nature of the bill. And frankly, it's been a little contentious. Some of us believe that this is a single-payer bill that needs some tuning up, and others have argued that it's no longer a single-payer bill and should be dumped entirely. We've had extensive discussions. We're going to have a meeting to try to bring together the first set of recommendations this Friday. And we see this as important to assure that whatever ultimately passes meets the standard of single-payer, but also to assure that we don't that we're flexible to adopt what's in this to the California situation. The most important consideration for California is Kaiser Permanente. Kaiser is a huge healthcare provider in the state, is generally widely liked by enrollees and by providers. Not perfect, but over time has become respected as a reasonably priced and high-quality deliverer of services. But it has some features which don't, strictly speaking, mesh with H.R. 676. So, and the other important consideration is that Kaiser is a hugely important political payer in the state. Right now, for a while, Kaiser was non-committal on single payer. Right now, Kaiser has said that they are an opposed position to the single payer bill. If Kaiser can be brought in and satisfied with their role under single payer and then support SB 810, the politics will change dramatically in favor of the bill. And so we think it's important both in terms of allowing Kaiser to exist and getting Kaiser's political support to address these issues. I've listed four key issues. There are others, five actually. There are others, but this will just give you a flavor for some of the key issues. What is the definition of an HMO? SB 810 currently has a fairly loose definition of integrated healthcare delivery system that permits networks that are clinically integrated, but that's not defined, and allows profits. HR 676 requires that that HMOs be staff model, that is, the physicians and the other staff work for the HMO and is not profit. So what's the resolution? The potential resolution is to tighten the definition that's in SB 810, which definitely needs tightening, but to be clear that models that are a little bit different, like the Kaiser model, where Kaiser contracts with doctors but doesn't employ them is acceptable. And probably to allow internal investors, like a physician who owns his or her own practice, but not external investors. That is, not be driven by profit motive by people who aren't on the ground delivering care. Payment is another tricky issue. HR 676 capitates outpatient care, but facilities are budgeted as facilities, and no surplus is allowed to be retained in either case. California HMOs operate differently. They capitate both inpatient and outpatient together and use surplus to invest in more facilities. This is a tough issue. We may just go with the 676 approach purely, or we may have proposed an arrangement where the surplus is nominally retained by the provider, but the use of that surplus is regulated so that there can't just be a decision to go invest in a location or in a type of technology that doesn't seem needed. Physician networks under SB 810 can require that people stay in for 12 months once they're in, and HR 676 prohibits this kinds of feature. This one, we're trying to figure out how critical that is, and there are some differences of opinions on that. Copays are allowed in SB 810 and not in 676. Pay for performance, a really interesting issue. As you all know, under the Affordable Care Act, there is a huge push for accountable care organizations, which is the latest term and acronym for pay for performance. You pay providers, you pay organizations if they meet certain cost and quality standards. Sounds pretty appealing, but the evidence from other fields is that if you try to use incentives like that for an activity which is inherently complex and carries its own rewards, like the practice of medicine, you tend to have the counteracting effect. You have the opposite effect of what you intend. You tend to get more of the things that are easy to count and less of the overall quality. And in fact, all of the research to date on ACO and similar experiments have failed to show any enduring benefits. So that 676 prohibits that. 810, as written, encourages pay-for-performance approaches. And the question is, do we go strictly to 676, or do we look for something in between? This is unresolved for us, but what I've indicated is that one possible solution is to allow the use of financial incentives, but in a way that is rigorously overseen, both in terms of the design, so as not to create these perverse effects that are unintended, and also in the evaluation, so that if they don't work, then they're tossed out. So that gives you a quick overview of the history and the current politics and technical discussions. I think we're going to go through the presentations before taking questions. Is that right, Ollie?
No, I think let's take a few questions.
Okay.
Because I think it's good to have a specific
okay.
presentation. Are there questions for Dr. Khan at all? Yes.
So the question is how to get Kaiser Permanente to endorse single payer. And unfortunately, I can speak only hypothetically now because Kaiser is opposed, they're also not actively, and there's no active bill. They're not interested in our experience, not interested in sitting down and figuring out what's necessary so that they can support. We actually approached them and said, we'd like to, you know, to understand your concerns and address them, and they basically said, we oppose, full stop. And so we think that this isn't the right, unfortunately, isn't the right time to resolve that. Meantime, quite a few PNHP members are Kaiser docs, some in positions of leadership, obviously supportive of single payer, and together we're trying to understand the Kaiser perspective on what makes for efficient quality care and to incorporate that as best as possible into the bill. Again, at this point, it's based on the views of our Kaiser docs who are members of PNHP and our best estimate, and that's all we can do until such time as it becomes a bigger issue again and we sit down with Kaiser and really hash through the details. Correct. So I didn't get into that. The way this has evolved in California, in large part due to the 3/4 requirement for any bill that has anything to do with taxes, is that this has been written as a policy bill. So it lays out what the services would be. It lays out how the rates would be set and overseen, but it doesn't give actual numbers. The particulars of the financing have evolved over the last 10 years, gotten a little worse because it used to be that if we had about an 8% payroll tax and a modest surtax over $200,000 per family annual income, these are 10 years ago numbers, that would be pretty much enough to pay for single payer. It's harder now because employment is down and healthcare costs have, of course, gone up faster than inflation and faster than wage rates. So we're probably now talking about more like a 11 or 12% payroll tax and perhaps a bigger surplus tax and other methods. But that has not been the focus and obviously will need to be the focus when we get to that discussion. Yeah, it depends how you ask the question, and if you ask the question in certain ways, it's more than half, and if you ask the questions in other ways, it's less than half. When we took this to a ballot initiative back in 1994, and everyone had their chance with whatever money they could muster to put out a spin on this, it didn't look pretty for a single payer. So we think it's important that the next time public opinion is assessed, whether it's for whether it's in polling or in a ballot initiative, that we have enough resources to portray that right. But I guess my last comment will be, as we have seen in healthcare as well as in other issues nationally, it's not always public opinion that matters. It's who's sitting in the legislature and voting, and the good news is we already have more than half the legislature supporting single payer, and our political strategy certainly includes looking at changing the who's representing certain districts that are, that have the potential to flip in favor of single payer.